Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
I'm only lost if I'm going someplace in particular. A friend was traveling around Europe, training from city to city. Despite her plans, her interest drew her in different directions, and a path unfolded that she couldn't have foreseen. Each point of discovery led to the next, as if some logic out of view were guiding her. During this phase of her journey, though she often wasn't sure where she was, she never felt lost. It was when she needed to arrive at a certain station at a certain time that she felt she was off course, astray, and at the fringe of where she was supposed to be. All this led her to realize that the more narrow her intentions on any one day, the more she felt behind, late, and lost. In contrast, the wider her net of designs, the more often she felt a sense of discovery. Regardless of where she had to be, it seemed that the more open to possibility and change she was, the more she felt like every moment she came upon was holding a treasure she was supposed to find. Of course, there will always be times that we need to find our very precise way. But more often than not, our image of a destination is only a starting point that we cling to needlessly. When we can free up our sense of needing to arrive in a certain place, we lessen the weight of being lost. And once beneath arriving and beneath our fear of failing to arrive, the real journey begins. Good evening again, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for being here, everyone. So these opening words from Mark Nepo really reflect a truth that I believe applies perhaps to many aspects of our lives, and certainly it all too often applies to our Zen practice and our spiritual practice. It seems that our modern society has an obsession, if you will, with achievement, with gaining, with attaining, with doing something in order to receive or to get something in return. And we're often conditioned with this mindset that it's in a sense a waste of time to engage in anything unless we're going to get something, something tangible, perhaps something measurable out of it. Society conditions us to completely be goal-oriented and results-oriented all the time. We have almost this kind of pay-for-play mentality that there must be some payoff in anything that we engage in. And this kind of mentality, of course, tends to create expectations, all kinds of expectations in us, expectations that we believe have to be met, and often they have to be met in a very, very specific way. If I'm going to invest my time, my effort into any endeavor, then there's this expectation that I must get some measurable result from it, that I must gain or attain something, and often that I must do so as quickly as possible. And as I've said in prior talks, expectations, they're too often simply another form of attachment or craving. Our expectations are just another form of attachment or craving. And from a Buddhist perspective, we know that attachment in all its forms is really one of the primary causes of dukkha, of discontentment, of dissatisfaction, of dis-ease, of suffering. And practice for many is no different, right? We can often come to practice and not only do we want, but we expect to see results from our practice. We expect to gain or attain something from it. We expect to gain something from practice. And we also often come with the expectation that we need to see the results, that we need to see this gain very quickly, in a short period of time. We don't want to have to wait too long. We don't want to have to sacrifice too much of our time to get whatever it is that we are expecting. Quick results, rapid satisfaction, almost a kind of very fast food approach to spirituality and to cultivating insight, to cultivating wisdom. Zen teachings point us in a very different direction. Zen teachings point to a very different way of thinking, to a very different way of being. The late Shunryu Suzuki Roshi spoke about this idea of gaining in this way. He said the most important point in our practice is to have right effort. Right effort directed in the right direction is necessary. If your effort is headed in the wrong direction, especially if you are not aware of this, it is deluded effort. Our effort in our practice should be directed from achievement to non-achievement. Usually when you do something, you want to achieve something. You attach to some result. From achievement to non-achievement means to be rid of the unnecessary and bad results of effort. If you do something in the spirit of non-achievement, there is a good quality in it. So just to do something without any particular effort is enough. When you make some special effort to achieve something, some excessive quality, some extra element is involved in it. You should get rid of excessive things. If your practice is good, without being aware of it, you will become proud of your practice. That pride is extra. What you do is good, but something more is added to it. You should get rid of that something which is extra. This point is very, very important. But usually, we are not subtle enough to realize it, and we go in the wrong direction. When you are involved in some dualistic idea, it means your practice is not pure. By purity, we do not mean to polish something, trying to make some impure thing pure. By purity, we just mean things as they are. When something is added, that is impure. When something becomes dualistic, that is not pure. If you think you will get something from practicing Zazen, already you are involved in impure practice. It is all right to say there is practice and there is enlightenment, but we should not be caught by that statement. You should not be tainted by it. When you practice Zazen, just practice Zazen. If enlightenment comes, it just comes. We should not attach to the attainment. The true quality of Zazen is always there, even if you are not aware of it. So forget all about what you think you may have gained from it. Just do it. The quality of Zazen will express itself. Then you will have it. People ask what it means to practice Zazen with no gaining idea. What kind of effort is necessary for that kind of practice? The answer is effort to get rid of something extra from your practice. If some extra idea comes, you should try to stop it. You should remain in pure practice. That is the point towards which our effort is directed. And so Zen practice, Suzuki Roshi points to here, is not about gaining or attaining anything. In fact, in our practice, the opposite can be said to be true. It is rather a practice of letting go or of relinquishing. And letting go or relinquishing from a Dharma perspective is not simply giving up something or losing something, but rather it can be seen as letting go into something new. Not an end, but a transformation. It is primarily a transformation of the heart, a transformation of the mind, a transformation in our way of thinking and in our way of being. And there are often said to be three myths regarding starting practice or beginning to engage in Zen practice. Myth number one is that things need to be just right in your life, or they need to be a certain way, not how they are right now in this very moment, in order to fully begin to engage and practice. This is the myth that conditions in your life right now are perhaps not quite right for practice. We can have this idea that the conditions of my life right now in this moment, they're just not right. They're not good enough for me to begin practice. The conditions that we actually have right now and in every moment of our lives are exactly the right conditions for embracing practice wholeheartedly. Right now, just as things are. Myth number two is that thinking that your life and your practice are somehow two different and separate things. This thinking that our Zen practice is some extra practice, some extra activity, kind of like an extracurricular activity that we participate in outside of our regular everyday life, our work, our relationships, our home life, etc. That they are two different things. And myth number three is that we need to know exactly where we are going in our practice, what the results or the outcomes of practice need to be, what practice will do for me, what practice will help me to gain, what practice will change in me. That we need to know this from the very beginning. But in Zen, the opposite, again, is actually true. We embrace and we cultivate what is known as don't know mind, what Suzuki Roshi so often referred to as beginner's mind, a mind that is completely open, completely flexible and receptive to whatever it is that our practice experience is and what it will be in each moment. And it's also a mind that is not fixated on accomplishing, on gaining, on attaining this magical something. That I must gain or attain or achieve something from my practice. This was what the great Zen master Dogen's view of practice was. No gaining, no attainment, leaving no trace. When our practice, when our Zazen becomes about gaining or acquiring something, even enlightenment or insight, which we often think of as the goal or the purpose of practice, that the goal of practice is to acquire insight, to gain enlightenment. But when we approach it in this way, it quickly just begins to slip into just another form of duality, of attachment, of clinging. We may think that our goal is a noble one, a wise one, enlightenment, awakening, insight, but it can quickly just become more clinging, more chasing, more craving, more separation. Because again, attachment, clinging, and craving anything in all its forms brings discontentment. It brings dissatisfaction. It brings dukkha, suffering. And this is very clear in the Buddha's Second Noble Truth, which outlined the causes of our discontentment. The primary causes of our discontentment are ignorance and attachment, this craving. And now we often refer to Zen practice, to any spiritual practice, any Buddhist practice, we often refer to it as a path. You often hear that term used, the path. But Zen practice, Dharma practice, isn't a path in the usual sense that we tend to think of as a path. Right? Normally, we think of a path as being very linear, getting to or arriving from point A to point B. And we think of there having to be a specific destination, a specific goal or outcome, that we begin at point A and we somehow have to traverse this path and get to point B, this destination, this goal, this outcome. Our conditioning is such that we must have some goal or some accomplishment in mind. We need to have this. Our mind tells us that we need to have some goal, some destination, some outcome that we must achieve, that we must get to. Some carrot that's dangled for us to chase after it. And then we feel this pressure that we must reach that goal. We must reach that destination. And we must reach that goal or that outcome in a certain, perhaps even a very specific period of time. This is our usual way of thinking. And I remember hearing many, many years ago, a reflection from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. He was speaking about, particularly when he teaches here in the West, he would often hear from people who would say things like they really wanted to engage in this practice. They thought it was such a beautiful practice, and we want to learn meditation, and we want to gain insight, we want to gain enlightenment. But he said they always added a question that really, it was so profoundly sad to him that it made him want to cry. Because he said people would often ask him, how long will it take? How long will it take? How long will it take me to achieve insight? How long will it take me to become enlightened, to awaken? This is the very Western view in particular of spiritual practice. I like it, sounds good. Sounds really good to me, I want to do it, but I need to know how long it's going to take. I have to know. This was people expressing their big goal over here, and then the short path over here. They had this big goal, but they wanted the short path over here. And so in other words, they view it as there's the path, and that path must lead to some goal. They're two separate things, two very distinct things. There's this automatic duality between path and between goal. Two very separate things. A clear distinction for most people between path and goal. But the late Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, he described the meditation in this way. He would say, if people could sit and keep sitting without looking for results, a gap could be created in ego's defenses, and unconditional awareness could begin to shine through. But ego furiously opposes unconditional awareness. And its key strategy against meditation's assault, he taught, is spiritual materialism. This is the attempt to make use of spiritual teachings for our own preconceived purposes. We would like to live longer, be healthier, stronger, more highly competent, more magnetic, more powerful, more highly admired, richer, and more invulnerable. What better vehicle toward these ends than the profoundest ancient wisdom and techniques of mind training, honed by centuries of application? And if meditation can be tied to ambition, the heart of its power of liberation is gone. It is lost. From the beginning, Trungpa Rinpoche fought a very pitched battle against spiritual materialism. He never tired of explaining in different ways that the true spiritual journey is that of surrender, of relinquishing, of the gradual abandonment of the reference point of ego through an ever clearer vision of things just as they are. So Trungpa Rinpoche often warned against what he referred to as spiritual materialism, of using our practice almost as a form of attachment to specific goals, to specific outcomes that we think should come from practice. In Zen, we practice for the sake of practice. We practice because practice is the direct expression of who we already are. It is through practice, it is through the journey, through the path, that we bring forth our truest and most authentic self into the world. And we do so for the benefit of all beings. Why are you here? Why have you come to Zen practice? Why has any of us begun this journey? Why have we come to this practice? For me, I believe that each one of you is here, expressing who you already are, expressing your authentic self. Whether you realize this yet or not, you are here because you are expressing who you already are. You are experiencing what my teacher often used to refer to as authenticity, our truest, most authentic self. And thus there's no separation, there is no duality between the path, which is the seed of practice, and the goal, which is the fruit that naturally is born from the path of practice. Zen Master Dogen long before Trungpa Rinpoche, but much in the same manner, similarly described our practice as practice realization or practice verification. And what he meant by this is that the fruit of our practice is realized. It is verified through the path of practice itself, through continuous practice, not in some achievement, not in some gaining, not in some attainment after practice, after the path, but rather that it is the path itself. Dogen expressed it in this way in the Shobogenzo, in his essay, The Bendowa. There is a portion of the Bendowa, a teaching, that is referred to as Jijiyu Zanme. And he says in the Shobogenzo, in the Bendowa, if practice and realization were two things, as it is commonly thought of, each could be recognized separately. But what can be met with recognition is not realization itself, because realization is not reached by a deluded mind. In stillness, mind and object merge in realization and go beyond enlightenment. Nevertheless, because you are in the state of self-fulfilling samadhi, without disturbing its quality or moving a particle, you extend the Buddha's great activity, the incomparably profound and minutely subtle teaching. Grass, trees, and lands, which are embraced by this teaching, together radiate a great light and endlessly expound the inconceivable, profound Dharma. Grass, trees, and walls bring forth the teaching for all beings, and they, in accord, extend this Dharma for the sake of grass, trees, and walls. Thus, the realm of self-awakening and awakening others invariably holds the mark of realization with nothing lacking, and realization itself is manifested without ceasing for a moment. This being so, the Zazen of even one person at one moment imperceptibly accords with all things and fully resonates through all time. Thus, in the past, future, and present of the limitless universe, this Zazen carries on the Buddha's teaching endlessly. Each moment of Zazen practice is equally wholeness of practice, equally wholeness of realization. This is not only practice while sitting, it is like a hammer striking emptiness. Before and after, its exquisite peal permeates everywhere. How can it be limited to just this moment? And the Zen teacher, Judith Rager, she comments on this essay by Dogen. She says, Dogen placed great emphasis on understanding enlightenment as seen without the veil of our human perceptions, of our human assumptions. He wanted us to know enlightenment within boundless time and space, which he incredibly and poetically expressed in the Jijiyu Zanme, in the Shobogenzo fascicle, Bendowa. He did not want us to see enlightenment as an event, a moment, or a certain experience in the timeline of our life, but rather as the actual process of living. Dogen wishes us to understand how to live as clearly and directly as we can without the two veils of the human mind, those two veils being one, the veil of our reactive emotions, which centralize around an I, me, or mine, and our likes and dislikes, and number two, the veil of our perceptions and our hidden assumptions. However we choose to describe it, Dharma practice, Zazen practice, is not a means to an end. It is in many ways, it is the means and the end, both simultaneously. In Zen, however, we can often say that there is a relinquishing, a letting go of any goal. There is no attainment, there is no end to practice. There is no goal, no destination, no outcome over there to reach, to get to. There is nothing to attain, there is nothing to acquire. There is no culmination, there is no finish line. There is just the path. Just this continuous practice of the way. In Zen or Buddhist practice, we can often make enlightenment or awakening or insight our goal or our destination, and we begin to cling to that idea of what enlightenment is, what awakening is, what it looks like, and how we're supposed to get there. And we ourselves create this distinction and this separation between path and goal. We become attached or fixated on that goal of attainment, of reaching something. Or we may come to practice with a mentality that we want to achieve or attain something in particular from practice, such as calm, tranquility, peace of mind, discipline. We may come with this idea that that is the goal of our practice, that we want to attain those qualities. But we come with these preconceived expectations and attachments to these specific results or outcomes. We come with this attachment to our imagined ideas of what the results or the outcomes of practice should be. And we enter from the outset with a mind that is trying to control or to manipulate practice with some specific outcome or goal in mind, and also with specific time frames, as if we're ordering up our practice from some menu. We wanted a little bit of this, we want a little bit of that, a touch of this, and we want it now. My teacher would often say to those seeking those goals, such as calm and serenity and peace of mind, he would say, if you didn't bring that with you, you're not going to find it here. And he was referring to exactly this attachment to these goals that we come with, these expectations that this is what practice is going to bring us, that it must bring us this. And then, of course, with that mind, that it must bring me this quickly. What you will find in practice is a profound path of wisdom, of freedom, of liberation that unfolds and reveals itself continuously without end. And we may very well experience, of course, many of those qualities. We may cultivate many insights. We may cultivate many of the benefits of practice along our path if we're open to experiencing them with a mind that is not clouded by our attachments and our expectations of specific results. This is what the great Korean Zen master Chan-ul referred to as sudden awakening, gradual cultivation. He was talking about this sudden insight that we may gain, but that it must be cultivated gradually along the path. The seeds of Dharma practice and the fruit that they bear are profound, and they are minutely subtle, as we so often say. We don't always readily or easily or immediately see those results, often because the obstacles of our own conditioning get in the way of our looking and of our seeing clearly. We aren't looking with clarity, or we're looking outside of our immediate experience, becoming lost in yesterday's and tomorrow's, and we don't see what's right in front of us in each moment. We're so focused on looking for our imagined goals that need to be attained that we miss the subtle truths that are constantly revealing themselves right before our very eyes, right before our very path, even as we walk that path. An ancient Zen master once described the path of practice, and in essence, the goal as well, as being like this. He said, it is like walking through a fine mist for a period of time. You don't even realize you're getting wet until you're completely soaked through. This is how the path is. We often don't see the fruit of our practice, the fruit of the path, but we don't see it because we're not looking correctly. We're looking outside of ourselves. We're looking in the rear towards yesterday. We're looking ahead towards the future, but we're not looking at each step right in front of us as it unfolds on this path of practice. And so when we're attached to or become fixated with some imagined goal, some imagined result from our practice, we can easily miss the fruits that the seeds of our practice path have been bearing all along as we've been walking it. Our endless pursuit or searching for some goal becomes the very obstacle that obscures us from realizing what is already unfolding, moment by moment by moment. And I'll conclude with this. In the past, I would say in the last 10 to 15 years, and I've mentioned this before, Gesho and I have become very much into hiking. We love to go hiking, we love to be out in nature, and do hikes out in nature. And I see the path of practice in a sense being very much this way. Because often when we go on a hike, sure, we may have some destination that we're trying to get to, right? Some specific summit or a waterfall or a lake or some other peak that we're trying to reach, and it may have a beautiful view, and we're working our way towards that destination, towards that summit or that peak that we're trying to reach. But really, for me, what I've come to realize is that really the beauty of hiking out in nature is the entirety of the hike itself. If I'm just focusing on reaching that one peak, that one summit, seeing that one waterfall, getting to that lake, then I may miss all of the beautiful scenery. I may not appreciate all of the beauty, all of the natural beauty that has been around me during that entire path, however long it may be. The real beauty comes in the path itself. As we walk towards that, perhaps that destination, that summit, that peak that we're trying to reach, the real beauty is in getting there. The real beauty is in walking that path and getting to whatever that place may be. When we're able to let go of that kind of idea that the whole purpose of the hike is to get to that one spot, we miss the rest of the hike. We miss the rest of the path. Practice is like this. When we become attached to some specific result, even enlightenment or insight, we miss the entirety of the path that we've been walking. And that goal that we've been trying to reach or that we think we need to get to or attain, it just gets further and further and further away from us. But when we appreciate the path itself, we realize then that the path is the goal.